Hey, Bankless Nation, welcome to another episode of State of the Nation, where we do a deep dive on a hot topic. The hot topic this week is Aave V3, the return of Aave. Super excited about this. New Aave version just launched. We have the founder of Aave on the episode today, and we're going to talk with Stani all about the launch of Aave. We're going to talk about some other things too, David. What's on the agenda for today?
Yeah, Aave has expanded its scope just beyond borrowing and lending. So in addition to Aave, we're going to talk a little bit about Lens Protocol. We had Christina from Aave on our panel all about the Web3 social world, which is something that is boiling under the scenes, I think, behind the front page of Web3. Social Web3 is a thing, and Aave, the team at Aave, is kind of leading the charge. So there's so much to unpack with Aave V3, but there's also so much to unpack with Lens Protocol. And of course, Stani has been around since before you and I, Ryan. And so I would just want to pick the brain of an OG DeFi builder that's kind of seen it all. What's he think about the world of crypto in 2022? We're going to get into all of these subjects.
Yeah, I've got a lot of questions for him, particularly on that last piece, right? To be able to pick his brain and talk about, will DeFi ever recover relative to ETH? What does he think about this new crop of DeFi 2.0 builders, this new class, these young hooligans, and are they shaking things up? So a lot more to talk about. Guys, before we get into the episode, want to tell you a bit more about Zerion, our friends at Zerion. They've got a special announcement, I think. We've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks. They are releasing a multi-chain world here. A lot more to explore on Zerion. Zerion, of course, is a place where you could take your non-custodial wallet, whether that's MetaMask, whether that's your Ledger. You keep your private keys, you plug it into this fantastic interface, and then you could do things with your crypto money. Imagine that. That's what DeFi provides. And you could do things cross-chain. So if you look at this, David, I've got Optimism here. I've got Avalanche. I've got Ethereum across multiple layer twos and also across alternative layer ones. You can also bridge, be a bridge-or. You can move from Ethereum to Polygon in just one click with Zerion as well. If you click this more button, you can see save, borrow, other things you can do within the Zerion interface. Man, this is a way a bank should be, right? Because this is a bankless user interface. I think everything we were hoping would come true when Stani started the Aave protocol, now coming true in DeFi with interfaces and aggregators like Zerion. What else you want to say about this awesome tool, David?
Well, this is going to be particularly relevant because this is a brand new feature in Aave V3 we're going to talk about. It's called Portals, because Aave V3 is not on the Ethereum L1 exclusively. It is all across so many different layer twos and other layer one chains. And so not only is Zerion bridging between all the chains, but so is Aave itself. So I think Zerion's probably going to ultimately be an interface for the many, many different versions of Aave V3 that are deployed all across the crypto universe. So this is a very timely topic to be talking about a multi-chain, multi-layer two world.
Yeah, absolutely. So all you got to do is grab your wallet, your non-custodial wallet, plug it into Zerion. You see a link in the invite to do that and get started, track your assets. David, got to ask you the question I ask at the outset of these conversations, which is, what is the state of the nation today?
Ryan, the state of the nation is upgrading. This one was easy this week. We are certainly upgrading in Aave V3. This is the state of the nation, of course. Not only is Aave V3 upgrading from V2 to V3, but we are upgrading from a monolithic L1 world to a world of many, many chains. So whether you believe the future is multi-layer 2 or multi-chain, we are upgrading nonetheless. And so, Ryan, we are going to explore what does it mean to upgrade in the world of 2022 in crypto. So, Ryan, we are upgrading this week.
That's a great topic. Guys, I can't wait to talk to Stani. It's been over a year, maybe more, since we've had him on the podcast. So can't wait to pick his brain a bit more. We will be right back with Stani. But before we get to the conversation, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
So you've got some money, but how are you going to use it? You want to spend.
You, me, shopping now, bro.
When you know you should be saving.
You'll never buy a house at this rate.
But what if you could spend and save at the same time? For the enlightened kind, with inquiring minds, a new world awaits. Set yourself free with completely flexible self-repaying loan technology. Supported on desktop and mobile. Seize the power of Alchemix. allowing you to spend and save at the same time. Leverage your wealth without risk of liquidation. Take out a loan that repays itself. By using yield from your deposit to pay off your balance, your only debt is time. What was once inconceivable is now within your grasp.
Are you winning some?
The Layer 2 era is upon us. Ethereum's Layer 2 ecosystem is growing every day, and we need L2 bridges to be fast and efficient in order to live a Layer 2 life. Across is the fastest and cheapest and most secure cross-chain bridge. With Across, you don't have to worry about the long wait times or high fees to get your assets back to the Layer 1. Assets are bridged and available for use almost instantaneously. Across's bridges are powered by UMA's optimistic oracle to securely transfer tokens from Layer 2 back to Ethereum. Across is critical ecosystem infrastructure, and ownership is being handed over to the community. You can be a part of this story of Across by joining the Discord and becoming a co-founder and helping to design the fair launch of Across. If you want to bridge your assets quickly and securely, go to across.to to bridge your assets between ETH, Optimism, Arbitrum, or Boba networks. Living a bankless life requires taking control over your own private keys. And that's why so many in the Bankless Nation already have their Ledger hardware wallet. And brand new to the Ledger lineup of hardware wallets is the Ledger Nano S Plus, a huge upgrade to the world's most popular hardware wallet. With more memory and a larger screen, the Nano S Plus makes it easy to navigate and verify your transactions. And the paired Ledger Live desktop app gives you increased transparency as to what is about to happen with your NFT. What you see is what you sign. The Nano S Plus gives you the smoothest possible user experience while you're doing all of your crypto things. So go to the Ledger website to check out the features of the new Ledger Nano S Plus and join the waitlist to get yours. And don't forget about the Crypto Life card, also powered by Ledger. The CL card is a crypto debit card that hooks right into the Ledger Live app, right next to all the DeFi apps and services that you're already used to doing, like swapping tokens and staking. So if you don't have a Ledger hardware wallet, go to ledger.com, grab a Ledger, and take control over your crypto.
Hey guys, we are back talking about the return of Aave with none other than the founder of Aave, Stani Kluchev. He is the founder and CEO of Aave. He's a builder in DeFi before we called it DeFi. I'm pretty sure. You remember the ETHLEND days, David?
Yeah,
remember those days? Mm-hmm. Now he's expanding his horizons to the world of Web3 and social. We're going to talk about Aave V3, which was just released. We're going to talk about Web3 social, what that means. We're also going to get his take on the state of DeFi today, because Stani is an OG DeFi builder and he's going to lend us a lot of perspective. Stani, been a long time since we've seen you on Bankless, man. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's good to do a comeback here. Thanks, thanks, Ryan. Thanks, David. Nice to meet all the degens here too.
That's right. You know what? So we called this episode The Return of Aave, but the truth is Aave never left. Mm-hmm. You guys have been doing stuff for a very long time and shipping every step of the way. That's why I think Aave rose to prominence is because you have one of the shippiest teams in all of crypto and all of DeFi. But before we get into kind of the meat of what you've shipped recently with Aave V3, I'm just curious, man. So what have you been up to lately? What's Stani been doing lately? How are you dividing your time these days?
Yeah, I guess, I would say that most of my time goes into the building. So I try to spend as much as time as possible in the product side. And of course, a bit on the strategy, but recently, all the time that I have more left, I'm trying to vision a bit more where and which direction the Web3 is going towards. And of course, in terms of the talent curation, because the Aave team is growing. I think last time when I was in Bankless, we had 17, 18 team members at Aave, and now we have almost reaching 100. So we're scaling in that sense. And I think the reason actually why we are shipping quite a lot of things is that we have an amazing team that is just dedicated on pushing these protocols and interesting innovation out. So it pretty much is a kind of like a team effort. And I think like, that's what I realized recently, that you know, if you want to go very far, you really need to do it in a team effort way. So that has been my kind of a focus at the moment, and finding new things to build, of course.
Stane, the Aave team has always, in my mind, kind of stood out from the rest. Ryan said the shippiest, which is definitely an interesting and appropriate adjective, I would say, to describe the Aave team. And DeFi has certainly progressed as well since we've last talked. And in order to kind of set the context for this conversation about the details of Aave V3, I first want to get your take on what DeFi, what crypto, what Web3 has really done in 2021. That might have informed some of the decision making on the Aave team to build certain features into Aave V3. So again, kind of just like zooming out and getting your take. We haven't talked since 2021 crypto happened. So how would you just zoom out and reflect on 2021 crypto and what it means for DeFi, and how would you say that's impacted some of the decisions both behind the leadership and decision making at Aave, and also how that's gone into some of the prioritizations of Aave V3?
Yeah, definitely a lot. I mean, when we first built the Aave version 1, so we were building a protocol that we imagined holding maybe 20-30 million worth of value lock in smart contracts, very early days in 2019, ended up holding a few hundred million worth of assets. And then with the version 2, we were planning that maybe we'll hold a few hundred million, maybe up to billion, and in the current state across all the networks is pretty much securing roughly 14 billion worth of value in the smart contracts. So essentially, when we approached the version 3 upgrade of the protocol and the code base, we took two big initiatives. One, what was very important to us is the risk factor. So we started to realize that the ecosystem has started to grow, and not only in the sense that we have very interesting money Legos, we have very good base line protocols from lending, from trading, but also that the space has grown and spilled over into multiple networks. And there's a lot of user adoption here. So we realized that these protocols are starting to scale and they have protocol market fit. And what's fascinating here is that we understood that maybe actually these protocols will be used, especially Aave, in a way that we use HTTPS or IP protocol when we browse the internet. So they might be utilized by everyone who has access to finance directly or indirectly. So we started to think like how we can actually put the risk factor in front of how we're building things. We always built in a way that we want to build resilient, safe and secure protocols. But you know, it's people and talent who is building. So there's always risk that we need to mitigate. And also there's governance that adds risk or reduces risk depending on what kind of assets or risk parameters are set. So we try to build in a risk averse way. And second thing, what was important for us is the capital efficiency. So many of these protocols are layered in a way that you know, you might be using one DeFi protocol, but under the hood, there is another protocol that the funds are going, and a third one, and there's a lot of layering and different kinds of governance levels as well. So the capital efficiency played quite a lot of role because we wanted to ensure that it's a competitive protocol that we're building, and at the same time, it's scalable in terms of risk-wise.
So, and also something that's brand new in the world of 2022 crypto, and also later into the second half of 2021, is an explosion of many, many chains, including many layer two chains, alternative layer one chains. I know you were just at the Avalanche Summit, I believe in Barcelona, Spain, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's just growing ecosystems spanning, like crypto is just spreading its tentacles all across everywhere, including alternative layer ones. And Aave V3 is actually being deployed on, I believe, 6 different EVM compatible chains. Polygon.
Exactly.
Yeah, Polygon, Phantom, Avalanche, a few others. Which ones am I missing? Arbitrum, Optimism, Harmony, and of course the Ethereum L1. And I think that is a great place to start when it comes to Aave V3, because one of the cool new features in Aave V3 is something that you guys are calling portals. Can you walk us through portals and what is brand new with Aave V3 when it comes to portals?
Yeah, definitely. So portals is essentially a feature where we realized that you know, there's a lot of transaction between one particular chain to another. There's this bridging element. So bridge essentially is a kind of like a community service that is provided by a project, a community, or which is usually a multi-signature wallet, where you know it holds the transactioning and messaging between one network to another. So, for example, when you want to access the Polygon network, but you have your funds in layer one, you have to get them some way into that other network. So essentially what happens is that you will lock your funds in the main network, and then on the another network, equal amount of funds, maybe reduced by the fee, reduced by the fee, basically that's the amount you get on the another network. And essentially the challenge with the bridges is that, you know, moving this liquidity is very clunky at the moment. It takes a bit, well, actually quite a lot of time. And also it's not very capital efficient. Most of the assets are sleeping actually in those deposit contracts. So with this portal feature, we realized that, you know, actually lending protocols like Aave are a very good place to store assets across different networks, wherever those protocols are deployed. So essentially, if we store assets in protocols like Aave, it means that would be actually interesting if you could move the assets, the accounting between one network to another in a way that you have some sort of trust component there. And what we created is this portal. So portal is a way to actually get whitelisted by the Aave governance, and you are able to actually mint and burn A tokens in a way where you have a credit line. This credit line is just for the time that you actually settled the transaction. So what happens in an example is that you basically burn A tokens in one network, let's say the main Aave market, and mint them in Polygon market or Avalanche market. And essentially, this feature by itself, when you do this transaction under the hood as a bridge or some other entity, you're able to create services where you could actually deposit into the main Ethereum network and actually then borrow on Polygon network and repay on let's say layer two like Arbitrum or Optimism. So it's a way to move funds very seamless way, and also the risk is reduced to the caps of what those ports can do. So even in the portal, there's risk mitigation, and also there's a lot of space for the community to build additional mitigation tools such as staking and so forth.
So just to clarify, when you use a portal, you're not actually moving the assets cross-chain. You are, like, for example, you're putting Ether into the Aave version on Ethereum, but then the portal allows you to mint new value on a different chain using that collateral in the main Ethereum version of Aave? Or does Aave actually do move the capital, for the actual assets, from chain to chain?
So the capital doesn't need to be moved from chain to one chain to another. So what happens is that basically you burn the balance in one network, and then you basically mint the balance in another network. Mm-hmm. And basically, so you are using so-called A tokens. So when you deposit into the Aave protocol, what happens is that you get A tokens in return. And what these ports are doing, they just are accounting between different networks. And this is how we move funds faster between the networks itself.
Okay, so you deposit Ether into like the Ethereum version of Aave. You are received an A Ether or an Aave Ether, but then using a portal, you can burn that Aave Ether and then have that Aave Ether be minted on like Avalanche or Phantom or Polygon. Is that how it works?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
And then once to get your capital back, if you so you always have a deposit of Aave of your Ether in the Aave version of the Ethereum L1, or does that become kind of owned by the protocol at the layer one, and then you just have a claim on it later? How does that work?
So it's pretty much built in a way where it's more about the accounting. So for example, if you burn from one place, you mean in another place. So there's basically kind of like the accounting balance changes between those different markets.
And then can you use that A token outside of the Aave protocol? So like once you kind of do the burn on Ethereum, your AETH on Ethereum, and it's over to, say, Polygon, can I then use it in other places within the Polygon network? Or is this sort of, does it stay contained inside of Aave somehow?
It's inside of the bridging component. So essentially, but you could, what you could do actually for the users in terms of, for example, functionality, you can build, for example, on the user experience. Of course, the binting and burning happens under the hood. But basically, you can, for example, you can deposit in one protocol, and then you can withdraw from, sorry, in one network, and then withdraw in another network. But what just happens in between is that there's just balance mint and burn, which happens in the portal itself. So it's kind of like a more of a accounting measure and basically creating unbacked tokens and then backing them later.
That is fascinating. I guess this is not quite like a bridge, but what would you classify this as? Do you think other protocols will develop this sort of kind of accounting mechanism to allow the quick transfer of value from one chain to another?
I think so, because what you create here is basically speed. So you can transfer value from one network to another one very quickly and efficiently, but also you can create cross-chain applications. So just to give some example, many of the features that we created, let's say in Aave version 1 and 2, we received use cases that we didn't actually kind of like anticipated before. So for example, with flash loans, which was one of the last implementations that we had into the protocol, what we saw is that, you know, flash loans started to be used in terms of like arbitrage and a bunch of other interesting features. So I think like this feature particularly, the bridging is one of the use cases, but I think the more interesting stuff will happen once we have new interesting application coming in and developers building things. So I could imagine you could do a lot of cross-chain activity. The deposit in one network, draw capital in another one, and repay in some other network could be one example, but there's plenty of use cases probably in the future for this.
What's fascinating to me is because there's sort of a question, like investment thesis question that's popped up on our radar, and I think in the Bankless community's radar, which is, okay, we've got the birth of all of these different chains, some alternative layer ones, and also layer twos, right? And so the question of, will the existing DeFi protocols and networks, will they spread and kind of invade those chains and maintain market share in those chains? Or will there be a new set of players and a new set of winners that are, I guess, geographic specific, chain specific winners? So not necessarily Aave in a network like Optimism, but some Optimism type of lending and borrowing protocol pops up and starts to like win market share against Aave. But with this portal feature, it feels like what you're doing with what Aave is doing is it's building sort of a network effect that crosses chains, right? So like Aave had a massive liquidity lending and borrowing network effect on the Ethereum main chain. Now with this portal functionality, it seems to like be building a network across all of these other chains. And I'm wondering if you think that is one way that DeFi protocols like Aave will maintain their network effect as they spread from chain to chain.
I really think so. I think it's a one way to say that it's kind of like a competitive advantage in the sense kind of like that it creates a lot of, brings sort of efficiency in how capital flows. But for example, in the version 3, there's other features that are actually, I would say, brings interesting network effect, for especially in high transactioning networks and with lower costs. So for example, we have the high efficiency mode, and we call it also as E-mode, which means that you could borrow one particular asset at very high collateral borrowing power. So for example, you can borrow 98% of your collateral, and it applies to same category of assets. So let's say that you have DAI as a collateral, you can borrow 98% of that value in USDC, and then you can create different kinds of interesting transactions between stable coins if you want to go long and short. But also, like, it brings ability to do even a FX trading on chain with high leverage. For example, if you have a euro stable coin or let's say pound stable coin, and you can go with a very high leverage, which is quite fascinating. But there's other use cases, for example, where you might have, for example, staked ETH as a collateral, and then you borrow, let's say, up to 95% ETH, and you restake it into the ETH you put on staking, get the staked ETH again, and loop a bit. So there's sort of kind of like features and network effects that are actually designed on networks where you have low transaction cost and you need speed. And just the ETH example is fascinating because in the Aave protocol, there is 1.3 or so billion worth of staked ETH as a collateral at the moment.
Wow.
With relatively mediocre borrowing power. So it just showcases like how much you could actually use. And there is like a longer kind of like a idea here is that, you know, if you're able to leverage and have this like liquid staking of ETH, and it might apply towards to, let's say, liquid AVAX and so forth. What happens is that lending markets like the Aave protocol might actually have the staking yield reduced by let's say, the cost of the liquid staking. So you don't need to necessarily go and stake to ETH 2.0. You could come to the Aave protocol and you can deposit and withdraw, and you know the cost difference will not be that high. So that might happen over like a longer period of time.
Okay. So we just talked about portals, and we just talked about Emode a little bit. And I asked you that the specific question, if these are ways for Aave to build a network effect across chains, and you're indicating yes, they are. I guess I want to ask the zoom out question then too, while we're talking about this, because this is one of my burning questions for you going into this conversation, Stani. So we are now in a multi L1 world, multi layer 2 world. There's going to be lots of different chains, right? So it's no longer the Ethereum main chain since we talked to you in 2020. So how do you think this works, right? Will we have geographic winners, do you think, right? It's like, rather than Uniswap, you have a pancake swap or something, or like a Trader Joe in Avalanche. Or do you think some of the big category winners that started on Ethereum main chain will migrate to these other chains and just gobble up market share? I want you to like put on your forecasting hat and tell me what you think will happen. Will we have local chain winners, or will we have some major category winners that span many different chains? And another way to ask this is, there was a time where I think we thought that DeFi would have a whole bunch of blue chip types of assets and blue chip protocols. I think this is probably a symptom of price, right? With the DeFi Pulse Index and some of these other blue chip categories, where DeFi assets have not risen as fast as alternative layer one assets and other assets. And so people are questioning, well, maybe every chain will have its own category winner of DeFi, and so we can't. There's no such thing as DeFi blue chips anymore. What do you think about all of this? Do you think we'll have category winners or geographic winners?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the landscape changed completely over the past year or year and a half. I mean, I still remember when David, Ryan, me including, we were a bit more like Ethereum maxis. Well, I mean, to a certain extent, and I mean, being born and raised kind of like in Ethereum as well, like it's very funny looking backwards and being so naive and thinking like you can transaction in a scale where we are today with Ethereum at this current state, of course. But like I definitely believe that what you can do with the new change is that like new networks, you can build new communities, right? So you can take something that already exists somewhere. You know, you can fork that code base and create a new new protocol in a new network and maybe create a community around that. But end of the day, I've seen few other forks and they haven't been super efficient, mainly because, you know, what counts is the community. So how much you can actually build a community around the protocol. That's the starting point. The second is that how much you can actually innovate and what is your rate of innovation. So rate of innovation is something very important to all communities because especially when we're innovating in a open environment where all code is public, you know, everyone shares their ideas relatively publicly in governance forums, like what to build next, what kind of topics to work, and so forth. So I would say that if the community can keep up with the rate of innovation and who is able to constantly bring new things into the environment, that's where like kind of like we see a lot of advancements. And it's the job then of the community to actually embrace the technology, support good decision making, govern the protocol, and ensure that risk is managed and also kind of like a bunch of other stuff that happens in governance. So I think like if we have a new network, let's say today, and there is a bunch of new communities there, it might be that some of those native communities will spill over to Ethereum, other networks, and they might be they might be very expansive, but end of the day, what happens and will be important is like how much you're building things and how much you're able to make smart decisions as a community, you know, what kind of risk parameters you're applying, what are you doing with your treasury? So let's say Aave protocol, for example, generates roughly 50 million worth of treasury on current annual rate. And that treasury is used to further develop a lot of parts of the protocol, improvements, technical debt, you know, and there's a bunch of protocols sitting on big treasuries, but they aren't doing anything necessarily. And this is where you can actually compete a lot. And I think it's very naive even to think about a protocol that, let's say, is a lending protocol to think in a way that, you know, we are only bound to, let's say, lending or like we will not do trading in the future. End of the day, it's all about how big community and big DAO you can build and the network effect. So I think it's all about innovation end of the day.
That's fascinating.
The cross-chain portals, Donnie, is like such a huge conversation, and it's really just one of three big innovations out of Aave. Yeah, we have spent so much time talking about it, and I'm not done yet because I still have a few more questions about the whole portals thing. And the question is, it doesn't sound like you guys are using any bridges. You're not using Connext to get to Arbitrum or Optimism, and you're not using Wormhole or any other sort of bridge to get cross layer one. It seems to me you've built your own messaging system between all the implementations of Aave on all the various chains. And so I'm wondering, how does the accounting work? Is there like a central source of truth of the accounting for all Aaves across all the various chains? Or is it kind of just between the, if like I deposit Ether on the Ethereum chain and then I want to mint a Ether on Avalanche, the Ethereum version of Aave pings the Avalanche version of Aave to mint that a Ether there because through the portal. How does that communication platform work? Is there one central ledger or is it just a matter of communication between Aaves? And can you kind of just talk about the security trade-offs between using an actual bridge versus a messaging platform between the different versions of Aave?
Yeah, so there's one thing I need to correct is that there is basically the portal is a place where you can get debt as a port. So a port can be a bridge, for example. So what we are planning to do and like how we vision the portal feature to work is that there's different kind of bridges at the moment. There is a bunch of selection that you can have. You can have Hope Protocol, you have Connects and all these bridges. And what the bridges can actually do is that they can get the credit line to mint and burn A tokens, basically up to a certain cap, for example. So, and this cap is voted by the Aave governance, meaning that let's say we have a new bridge that is requesting to become one of the ports and to mint and burn A tokens. And then the Aave governance needs to decide, okay, so what will be the amount that that particular bridge, based on, you know, their technology, you know, their community reputation, they should basically be able to mint and burn up to that particular cap. So one thing, so that's just the starting point. The second thing, the phase two will be to think, so if there is the cap to mint them into a certain depth level, essentially, how we can actually backstop that minting. Should there be some sort of like a staking, separate staking module, or the current safety module applying to that those minting caps, or how we should do. And that's pretty much something that we haven't built before yet. And it's more about the Aave governance to kind of like decide whether to apply token economics there, or just rely on the reputation that, okay, we trust that Hope Bridge, you know, they basically clear the accounting and kind of like there won't be any differences between different networks in their balances. So it actually empowers the current bridging ecosystem.
Okay, so yeah, so it does tap into the various bridges that are cross-chain, yes, cross-layer two. Are there bridges that Aave has already supported, or is that up to Aave governance?
It's completely up to Aave governance, essentially. And there is a recently a proposal. Well, it's more of a governance discussion made by Mark Zeller from the Aave Genesis team, of a framework of actually how do you apply to become a port in the portal. And essentially, it's just a whitelisting of a particular address by the Aave governance.
Of course, the bull case for bridges is that so many users will be porting money across them and making a lot, yes, of volume go across the bridges. But I think people are always forgetting that it's probably actually going to be the DeFi apps themselves that use bridges way more than the actual users. And I think Aave is a fantastic example of this. And of course, just to reiterate, the significance of a multi-chain, multi-layer one, multi-layer two world is definitely illustrated in how important this portal topic is and why we've given it so much time. But I think, Ryan, I think we're ready to move on to some of the other two big features out of Aave V3. The next one, Stani, is efficiency mode, which you alluded to earlier. But can we just back up and start from scratch with efficiency mode? What is E-mode?
Yeah, so E-mode is really fascinating. So essentially, whatever, if you have a same category asset, so same category could be like one stablecoin collateral against another stablecoin borrow. And that could be like a USD stablecoin collateral, Euro borrow. So typical scenario is that you could, for example, deposit 100,000 worth of USDC into the protocol, borrow up to 98,000, let's say, euro stablecoin, and then you can sell the euro if you are going for a short, or vice versa. So it actually allows you to do this kind of like a very efficient FX trading even, but also that apply in between two different same stablecoin if there is some sort of arbitrage difference between, let's say, USDC and USDT, for example. But also it applies to same asset categories, for example, between ETH and liquid ETH, for example, staked ETH. And in that use case, for example, you can deposit your ETH into a liquid staking provider, such as Lido Finance, and then you get in return staked ETH. You can deposit it back to the protocol and borrow again ETH and redeposit and make it more capital efficient of your ETH staking. So you can leverage on your staked ETH, essentially. And this is the reason it's more high efficiency is because the ETH and staked ETH, they correlate in the same way in terms of the volatility. The same way as, for example, USDC and DAI, they correlate quite closely in volatility because they're pegged into the same currency. There's minor differences, of course. And in terms of, let's say, USDC collateral and your borrow, what happens there is that there is just minor amount of volatility because fiat currencies are less volatile than we anticipate, kind of like the crypto assets to be. Same applies to Bitcoin and wrap Bitcoin as an example.
Really, the theme I'm seeing here with all these innovations and on Aave V3 is just empowering users to be able to do more, just unlocking the full power of DeFi with more and more optionality for the users. The last big feature that I think comes out of Aave V3 is what's called isolation mode. And I think this kind of really taps into Aave's strengths. And it's really its differentiator from what has perceived to be its historical competitor, Compound, where Compound has been kind of the ultra-conservative, very few collateral types, where Aave's lent itself a little bit more to opening up more collateral types, allowing for more and more use cases to come about. But of course, you can't onboard every single collateral type because every single collateral type has its own risks. So I think this this isolation mode, which I'm going to ask you about in a second, is really trying to get the best of both worlds, where Aave really lets itself be useful to the long tail of assets while compartmentalizing that risk of those assets to make sure that it doesn't have any contagion to the rest of Aave. Sonny, could you explain isolation mode and what it is and how it's helpful for users?
Yeah, and isolation mode is something that actually derives of the how the Aave community works and the spirit of the community, because the Aave community and David, you gave an example, for example, about Compound. Like in Aave, I think the community has always been excited about listing new assets, and every new asset or going to a new network is always a new opportunity to tap into new user base, into new culture. And in case of Aave, there's been a lot of asset listings, but very, very conservative risk parameters. So basically, the listing has been very more kind of like a flexible, but then we kind of like compensate in a way where we have just more conservative risk parameters compared to other lending protocols. So essentially, we were thinking like, if we believe in the future where all of these assets will be tokenized, real world assets, you know, and we have just bunch of assets depending on like used to govern different DeFi protocols, or just getting community members together in creator economy, NFTs, and whatnot. So we just believe that there's going to be you know, hundreds of different assets that are like relatively suitable for using as a collateral or getting listed into the Aave protocol. What's important is that we have a way of scaling where new assets could be listed into the protocol in a way where it can happen very early, but the risk is mitigated. So the mitigation here is that an asset can be listed by decision of Aave governance in so-called isolation mode, meaning that normally when you deposit into an asset into the Aave protocol, let's say you have ETH and then you deposit Aave, you can use those both borrowing powers and just borrow anything you want. And that's your whole kind of like a collateral that is used to uphold and keep your position. In isolation mode, what happens is that you can use that particular asset as a collateral, but in a way that you can't use your other assets as a collateral. And this means that particular asset is siloed away from the other collateral exposures. And on top of that, there's minor addition, like across all the assets, is the fact that we have supply caps everywhere. So each single pool has a supply cap, and also the exposure, the borrow cap as well. So essentially, this means that we could list a new asset relatively quickly with a very low debt caps, supply caps, and also isolated. And this brings new communities, users to use the protocol.
That's really fascinating. And I'm glad Aave is doing that. It will help Aave conquer kind of the long tail of tokens and get new collateral sources onboarded more quickly. I'm curious, while we're on this subject, since the last time we talked, there's been a lot of protocol development. One protocol, which is interesting, and maybe not this specific one, but the philosophy undergirding it is RARI and the RARI Capital token. And they have sort of a like an ungovernance sort of process, right? There's not an actually on-chain vote for creating a new collateral pool. Instead, they sort of let the market create whatever pool they want in a permissionless way and sort of price the risk accordingly. What do you think of approaches like RARI? Is that interesting for Aave, or is that kind of counter to the premise of what the Aave protocol is trying to do?
No, I think it's quite fascinating what they're doing. And I really appreciate it because essentially governance minimization is an important topic. And it's something where many protocols can actually, they can function without governance, for example. Protocol like Uniswap could function without governance, but you know, the governance can actually manage the treasury, and there's a bunch of things that actually get all those community members together. So it makes sense there as well. In terms of the permissionless listing, for example, in Aave protocol, we added a feature into the reserves called risk admins. It's a access control to create additional smart contract logic where you could basically create logic based on permissionless listing. But for example, you could bind it with let's say token economics, different kinds of staking ideas where, you know, by staking, let's say Aave into a particular asset, you can increase the loan to value ratios, which is the borrowing powers, and even affect the interest rate curves. So that is something that can be built further with this risk admin features. My kind of like a challenge with the permissionless listing is that how do we ensure that kind of like a right people are using that? But that's also kind of like a UX question. But I think governance minimization is very important. And I love what they're also doing in terms of the idea of delegation of governance. And for example, in our case, like delegation of governance can be delegating the listing to risk admins, delegating interest rate strategies to service providers, such as, for example, Gauntlet. For example, at the current state, Gauntlet is providing dynamic risk parameters. So they are actively monitoring the markets and proposing new parameters to the other governance. Now, the challenge here is that every single vote actually requires to reach the Aave DAO, the short time lock quorum. Everyone needs to come together, and you need to have quite a big amount of capital and votes to pass that kind of proposal. But if you have brackets where actually service providers like Gauntlet could actually submit those parameters, you could actually delegate to that entity. And this decision can be made by the other governance, you know, and it can be like redelegated in the future again, depending on, you know, if there's more competition or and different kinds of scenarios. So the protocol is ready for that kind of a feature, but it's depends on the governance, like how much they want to introduce risk and if there's more risk or delegation, to what extent as well. But essentially it's there for the governance and ready for the version 2.3.
One thing I love about the Aave community's approach to all of this is Aave is like always moving forward. Like it's always pushing the ball forward. And I think in a lot of crypto circles, and sometimes, you know, maybe Bankless too, David and I, we glorify or we overemphasize the value of ossification. Right, ossification, because now no one can change it, and you know what you get, and it's a beautiful thing. Only the code is in charge, right? No longer humans, and like many things about Aave are ossified, but also you guys are continuing to push the envelope and build new features and expand into new horizons. And as I said, you're always moving forward. I'm curious, is there anything else you want to mention about the V3 features? That's kind of one question. And the second question tied to that is also like, is there ever a time at which Aave is done? Like, is V3 the fully ossified version of Aave, or is there going to be a V4, a V5, a V6, a V, you know, 10? Are we going to have as many Aaves as we have iPhone versions?
Yeah, how many shows are we going to do with you, Stani?
What's a year, maybe? So those two questions. What else in V3 should we know about, and when is Aave done?
I mean, there's a long list of different kinds of improvements that we have made. There's gas optimization as well, and kind of like we have also the ability to ensure that, for example, in layer twos, if sequencers are down, so there's a kind of like a remorse period before liquidation can occur. So there's a lot of smaller features that are specifically related to L2 and a lot of technical improvements But I think also like something that we haven't shilled enough is the fact that we also revamped the whole user experience. So we what we took is that we rebuilt the whole Aave application from scratch, which was amazing. And I'm super excited that we did that decision in our development team, because essentially we have an application that just functions well, way better at the moment. And the user experience is way more smoother. And the thing is that it's a community UI. So it's accessible through IPFS, you know, and anyone can actually contribute to that code base as well. One of the challenges in DeFi is that you usually build monolithic products. So you want to build, you know, the safe, secure thing. And then, you know, there's just like very difficult to contribute as a developer when you come into this space, because you necessarily don't know how to build smart contract infrastructure. And you know, the front end might be your way to Web3 in terms of like contributions. So we did that as well. And in terms of versions, I think like we're trying to actually decentralize more and more the development of the ecosystem. And we would love to see more people contributing directly and to, of course, our team as well. But essentially, I don't think there is going to be an ending of innovation. I think our community loves that. There is enough funding in the treasury. It's a self-sustainable DAO. The ecosystem is just thriving. I just don't see a way where we could stop doing what we're doing at the moment.
And so that was all of Aave V3. But what's interesting to me about Aave the team, Aave the organization, is that just building on Aave seems to not be enough for Stani the builder and the Aave team, because there's a whole entire other world going on with Aave in regards to Lens Protocol. And Stani, we've had you on for almost an hour now, and it was just about Aave V3, but there's so much more to talk about. So we're going to have to cut to sponsors here in a second, but there's been some Twitter activity between you and Elon Musk. There's also a growing social media mafia that I think you are growing over on the Aave team. There's a lot of things to talk about with Lens Protocol. So right after we get back from the break, I want to pick your brain all about that. But first, before we get there, we have to take a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. If you're going bankless, you need MetaMask. This is your tool to unlock the world of DeFi without giving up custody over your private keys. MetaMask is both a secure in-browser wallet and also a secure bridge for your hardware wallet. You can now trade tokens on any DEX or aggregator. MetaMask Swap gathers real-time pricing information across all the DeFi exchanges, allowing you to select your best price while getting all the MetaMask benefits of self-custody, lower gas costs, and increased transaction success rates. MetaMask also has a fantastic mobile wallet that I use when I'm out and about, which I use to collect POAPs, NFTs, and do all my DeFi things while I'm away from home. If you haven't downloaded MetaMask, you gotta try it out. Web3 wouldn't be the same without it. Download MetaMask for desktop and mobile at metamask.io and load up your Trezor, Ledger, Lattice, or Keystone hardware wallets so that they too can get into the world of Web3. Polygon is Ethereum's largest and most vibrant scaling solution to date. With millions of monthly users and all of the biggest DeFi apps, the Polygon ecosystem has turned into a blossoming metropolis of DeFi activity. Transactions on Polygon are quick and cheap, allowing users the freedom to achieve their DeFi goals, all while being economically anchored to Ethereum. But Polygon isn't just the proof-of-stake sidechain. The Polygon team is building a suite of scaling solutions, including Polygon Hermes, Maiden, Nightfall, and Zero, all with different design choices in order to be optimized for all possible crypto use cases. If you're a developer who wants to build on the Polygon ecosystem, go to the link in the show notes to check out their fantastic documentation. And if you're a user who just wants to experience fast and cheap DeFi, you can bridge over your ETH or other tokens and start playing around with any of the thousands of applications that are available on Polygon. Bankless is proud to be sponsored by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum that lets you trade any token at the current market price. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. The Uniswap Grants Program is accepting applications for grants. Do you have something of value that you think you want to contribute to the Uniswap ecosystem? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a uni grant at uniswapgrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless. All right, guys, and we are back with Stani from Aave. And Stani, something's interesting is going on with your Twitter header on the both mobile and desktop. But if you go to the Stani's Twitter, his header says, "This PFP real estate is for rent." And you have your Twitter picture just as a blank white circle. What's going on with that, Stani? What are you up to on your Twitter profile?
Yeah, I think I've been kind of like a recently, like quite a lot of like being very curious about social media and you know how to build more innovation on that side. But especially like this experimentation is pretty much kind of like an I would say like an event to raise a bit of funds for the SheFi. Mm-hmm. But also it's kind of like an interesting experiment in the sense that what if you could actually you know rent you know your profile. Picture real estate to someone else or maybe your header. And to be honest, like the Web2 social media, it doesn't have the kind of like a features to do that. But at the same time, it's something that's, you know, it's not part of the Web2 social media and how it's structured today. And I think like it boils down towards like a bigger discussion of what we have been talking about at Aave. So we built a social graph called Lens Protocol. And one of the main things there is that, you know, you have the ownership of your profile on chain and also the relationship with your followers. And there's sort of things regarding towards like what we're building Lens Protocol, but also there's so much innovation missing currently in the Web2 social, which is just kind of like a, I don't know. I feel what I've seen now recently, especially like what we're building with Social Graph, is that we could actually take the experience way more further and bring the value back to the users. And I think that's just part of what we're doing at the moment.
This kind of unlocks my curiosity, right? So like, are you envisioning a world with Web3 where it's much more open? Like Twitter, you can't do this, but somebody could create like a composable, some sort of primitive like DeFi plus Web3 kind of mashup where I could just like bid on your profile picture for a week. And like, maybe that's in stablecoins or something, but just like I suddenly can bid and own, rent out your profile picture for a week, and it's all very seamless and automated, and you know I guess you know taps into the power of your community. Are these types of features what excite you about Web3, or give us some like sci-fi type features?
Yeah, because in the current form, the way we build Web2 social, how it works essentially is that you know you have different kind of interactions. You as a user, you create your audience in a one platform, and you can't move that audience from one place to another. So you're kind of like bound towards that, let's say, database and the platform and so forth. And essentially, you're also bound the way that they, you know, the algorithms they use and the way they monetize and collect data. So essentially, Web2 social is about capturing the data interactions that you do on the platform and then selling services and products to you that you might buy. That's pretty much how it works. And all the algorithms is adjusted to finding you what you could buy and increasing the revenue. So at the moment, there isn't a way actually to have a system where, you know, all the developers just can come together and build competing algorithms, competing user experiences, and actually allow the users to vote with their feet very easily and go towards applications that are providing them better algos, you know, more algorithms that maybe are have more of the exploring side instead of like this echo chamber that you have in Twitter. So what we did is that we created a protocol that is essentially a social graph, meaning that you create your profile once, and anyone that builds an application on top of the Lens protocol can leverage of the whole social graph user base. So you as a developer, you don't need to focus on actually growth hacking the platform and the network effect. And so building social media is very hard these days. Just to give an example, I mean, creating something like Clubhouse takes a lot of effort, and you have to create a big platform. But here, let's say if you have 10 to 15 applications built on top of the Lens protocol, they're all growth hacking the same social graph. Essentially, everyone is helping to each other, feeding the graph, providing users, and sharing resources. Essentially, it's a public good for the whole community.
And does this give me self-sovereignty over my social graph?
Yes. And for me, the coolest thing is, of course, like I can go and create the profile for myself. And that profile is also, there's very heavy use of tokenization. So the profile is tokenized, and also the follow graph is tokenized. So for example, when I follow, for example, David, I'm his first follower. So I will get David follow NFT number one. And if Ryan is the second one, for some reason, Ryan gets the follow token ID number two, and so forth. And those follow token tokens, NFTs, they always reflect the content that you post. So they're dynamic NFTs. So for example, when David has a picture of a dog, the follow NFTs will, as a content posted, those follow NFTs will reflect the picture of the dog. So if David decides to post a picture of the cat, the follow NFTs will update dynamically and showcase the picture of the cat. And that's a dynamic NFT. So it essentially makes all the front ends, whether it's an application built on top of the Lens protocol, or it's OpenSea or some other wallet, they become by default distribution channels and front ends for the common social graph, which is quite insane if you think about it. And then you can, of course, collect the content. So from those dynamic NFTs, you can actually collect immutable NFTs as well. So if I really, really like the picture of the cat, what can I actually do? I can collect it. But also the collection logic is set by the application and David. So David can basically say that only my followers can collect this, or followers token ID, let's say one, sorry, Ryan. And then alternatively, like maybe token ID two, but you have to have Bored Ape in your wallet as well. So a bunch of logic, or you can auction or have limited edition. So the reason why there's a lot of optionality is that the whole protocol is built with smart contracts, and everything is modularized. So one thing we learned with the Aave protocol is that to get a lot of contribution, you need to create pieces of your smart contract infrastructure where everyone can come and create a new module, a new piece, a new kind of a logic. Just to give an example, there's community members that have built bonding curve collection logics, also a very fascinating follow module where you pay to follow to the profile owner, and then the profile owner can actually share the revenue of the collects. So you can actually create creator funding as well, and share the proceeds of your net, your kind of like a broadcasting channel.
I know David has a follow-up question, but I just wanted to make one comment here, which is like this early, I guess, analogy we've had about crypto, which is like, you know, a tech tree in a video game that you slowly unlock. And so many of the things that you just said, the reason why Web3 wasn't possible in 2016 or like Web3 social wasn't possible in 2016 or 2018 or even 2020, because we didn't unlock the previous branches on the tech tree. And now we have, right? So like words that use like tokens, right? Well, that came from smart contracts, that came from DeFi. Now they're maturing. So we have that primitive that we're working with in NFTs. And now we have that primitive that we're working with as well. And now we have like the raw ingredients to start to create an on-chain social graph and scalability, right? What you said to you, Sonny, is going to require a lot of block space, it strikes me. So the reason we didn't see Web3 social, I think, in the earlier manifestations is because we hadn't unlocked the tech tree. And now we've got these branches of the tech tree. And now maybe we're ready for Web3 social. But if we are, it feels very much like today, 2022, in Web3 is kind of like NFTs were in like 2019. Like we're just like scratching the surface, and they haven't had their mainstream moment. That was my comment. David, I know you got a question though.
Yeah, we're a little bit beyond this, but for the public record, David will not be posting cat photos on Lens Protocol. Strong team dog over here. Oh, nice. Well done, Stani. I'll have to get that Lens Protocol in the stream in a second. But just for the listeners, here's my like understanding of this, and Stani, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is, imagine if we had, like, Twitter has its specific algorithms, Instagram has its specific algorithm, Facebook has its specific algorithm, but the way that I'm understanding Lens Protocol is that we can more or less recreate a lot of these very basic algorithms, but it's the algorithms that become interchangeable, as in, like, now there's surface area for developers to compete on the best algorithm for the users. And so Lens Protocol, it's not a social media platform. It's not a Twitter. It's not a Facebook. It's a social media meta platform. It's like a meta platform for hosting many types of social medias that allows, whereas Facebook is very, very closed and well-gardened, and so is Twitter, and so is basically every other Web2 social media or like platform. Lens Protocol is the inverse of that. It's opening it up to developers to compete to build their own algorithms and their own profiles and their own platforms for users to have fun in the ways that, you know, we always kind of hoped Web2 platforms would have blossomed into. Is that a good mental model, or, and what would you add to that?
Yeah, it definitely is, because something we realized with decentralized finance, and definitely one of the building blocks that had to happen before that, and you know, NFTs creator economy, is that when you have an open ecosystem where everyone can contribute and there is no kind of like a barrier, or the barrier is very low, you will see a lot of fun and a lot of innovation happening. And in terms of, and of course, like, open system means that you could build things that maybe you couldn't do in a closed system before. So essentially, let's say if you have an open social graph where, you know, anyone can pretty much like create their profile and their follow graph. And by the way, this is amazing tool also for DAOs, because first time ever a DAO can actually own a permissionless profile and also have a broadcasting channel to their audience. So for example, the Aave DAO can create a and own a Lens handle. And what it means that if you have a big smart contract change or any kind of governance update, part of that smart contract payload, you could also have, you know, post this change log or the output of this governance decision also into the Lens protocol to all the followers. So it's a way to also create permissionless handles for DAOs. And I think that's going to be an interesting and fascinating use case. But just to give example, you know, when you have this open social graph, you know, then the builders, they don't need to focus of actually, you know, getting a lot of users. They can just innovate on the front end level. Maybe there's something that you could do better on Twitter. Maybe you can create completely new experience. And social media has always been about how you interact with the content and finding new ways, which, for example, we saw with TikTok, and also algorithms. And TikTok, for example, rewards things that go viral very quickly, and people like the content they like. And maybe it allows also to build those new algorithms. So let's say, for example, that algorithm that rewards something to become viral might not be very healthy, or, you know, you could actually build an algorithm that is more humane, or algorithm that is just somehow finds you content that you really, really like more, and you're not bound to the platform. So you have the battle of like front ends, competing on the user experiences, and also finding new application, niche, social media. And also you have the kind of like a competition between algorithms. And then I could imagine one particular front end where you come and you can actually choose different user experiences, but you could also choose which algorithm you want to use. So you could actually, you know, drop down and select or swipe different algos, you know, and it just brings sort of opportunities to the developers. And recently we had the Aleph Grow hackathon, which is the first like Web3 social media hackathon that we did with the global team. We had over 530 hackers and 116 different projects being hacked. And it's just insane how many young developers are out there and what they can actually build in a short period of time. And we saw multiple front ends being built in a period of a week and a half.
Well, Stani, I think I missed you at East Denver, but this very much aligns with the talk that I gave there, which talks about how where Web 2 protocols, when Web 2 algorithms are competing to produce rage, Web 3 protocols are competing for our love and affection. So I would imagine that something with Lens Protocol would finally enable people to opt out of the rage algorithm and perhaps opt into the love and affection algorithm. That definitely sounds like a positive future for us. And very much in line with the very shippy nature of Aave, you've poached some pretty interesting talent from around the Web2 sphere. The lead data scientist for Twitter Stories is now on the team Aave. We already talked to Christina, who was lead TikTok business development. You've also poached some pretty high-quality talent from Apple as well. Stani, what's going on over there? Are you building like a social media mafia? Tell us about the team that's being built over behind Lens Protocol.
Yeah, I mean, we had definitely amazing hires in the past year, and I'm super proud how much of our team actually is. There's like a lot of combination of community members from the Web3 and who has been in the space and are very experienced in smart contracts and talent coming from Web3 and also more from fintechs as well. So it's kind of like a very diverse set of talent that is coming into Aave. And definitely, I think it's amazing opportunity at the moment that we are able to attract a lot of people from different kinds of industries and especially from big tech. I think there's also some sort of realization with people that I talk and talent from big tech in terms of like what Web3 as an opportunity means and how we build things and how the community aspect is important here. And I think like many folks that are working in big tech and these big social media companies, they're pretty much like tired in the models of having kind of like to build applications where you have basically extract data from users and kind of like provide the same behavior of selling services. And the proposition of user on network is just a big value proposition, and networks that are actually kind of like bound by the governed by the DAOs, and I think we will see more and more talent coming into the space. So I'm super excited to hire more. So if anyone is out there, so just reach me out and you know, let's talk more.
Is there a roadmap for Lens Protocol? When do I get to go play with it as a non-developer, as a user that needs the developers to build some stuff? What should I be paying attention to with the future of Lens Protocol?
Yeah, I think if you go to docs.lens.dev, so docs.lens.dev, you have an amazing documentation that is done by our engineering team and our content team tried to make it as beautiful as possible. You can actually interact directly with the smart contracts, but also we build a very powerful API. And the API means that actually you can extract data from the protocol without in an indexed fashion. So for example, if you want to get all the data about different kinds of photo modules or even NFTs that a particular wallet address has in mainnet or Polygon, you can do that with the API. So it's a way of actually helping people to build faster social media applications. And what I want to see more maybe in the future from developers building actually community front ends that can be forked by anyone and we can just innovate as fast as possible in the space.
Stani, we've talked about Aave V3, which has been awesome. The return of Aave, even though Aave never left. And we also talked about just now Lens Protocol, what you're doing in the Web3 space. Why don't I just round this out and close this out, getting kind of your OG veteran hat a little bit and your perspective on the space right now. So number of things going on that we could talk about. And one question I think I have for you right now is, It seems like a lot of the value and some of the attention, at least in the Ethereum space, has been sucked out of DeFi recently, at least if you look at kind of token market caps, and gone into Ether, right? So the DPI to ETH ratio has been bleeding, and people are wondering if DeFi will recover against the value of ETH. What's your take on this? Are you bullish on DeFi? I'm sure your answer is going to be yes, but like, how about relative to Ether as an asset, as denominated in Ether? What do you think?
Swap my background to Aave, so I'm putting my DeFi cap on. I think these protocols are meant to stay, and maybe not the technology itself, but say. But what is the surplus is the DAOs and the treasuries they're collecting and the ability to innovate further. So I think what happens is that over the period of time, those communities that can constantly continue innovating securely and bringing new things into the space will definitely thrive. But I think in terms of like user adoption, especially with the layer twos and other networks, we will see more and more users coming. And I really, really believe that Web3 protocols are meant to, you know, be scaled something like IP or HTTPS, where they're in a very quite mainstream adoption. It will take time to get there, but the important thing is to realize that Web3 networks, they don't need to grow to, like, fast, as in Web2 platforms, for example, and especially in social media. If you don't have a successful platform in the couple of years, you kind of are in the graveyard zone. But in Web3, you know, networks can propagate very slowly, whether it's social media. Good example is ENS. It has been around for years and it's slowly growing all the time. POP as well, for example, started one person giving proof of attestation in different events, and it's growing into a protocol and so forth. So over years, so everything doesn't need to actually be very much like fast tech here in Web3. And that's, I think, that keeps me calm and excited to build new things.
Another rapid fire question for you then. So what's your take on alternative layer ones versus the L2 ecosystem on Ethereum? Do you think one is going to outcompete the other? Do you think that there's room for both? Just general thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think there's room for everyone, but the market share depends on how much there's innovation in all of these communities. And kind of like and the community support there. So I think all of them will exist, but then market share will depend on how much we see those communities building.
How about this new crop of DeFi builders that we've seen lately, and like under a moniker of DeFi 2.0, it feels like there's some DeFi Zoomer blood out there, some Gen Z blood.
Definitely
that
some cultural
are building
differences.
Some new things. Yeah, it's cultural differences from the DeFi class of 2018, 2019, the DeFi class of 2021 and 2022. What do you think of these new DeFi builders?
Are you Ryan saying I'm old or what?
I'm saying all of us are old.
I feel
Scotty.
Old, Scotty.
We've all aged 2 decades in the last 2 years.
One year in DeFi is 10 year in 10 year right. Normal life and 100 years in TradFi. So
yes,
I think it's amazing that there's a lot of young people out there building decentralized finance, and I think one observation is that the more younger people we have, they're more smarter. So I don't know where this kind of like a wisdom comes from, but. It for me, like, it even takes a lot of time to understand some of these protocols, and I need to put a lot of effort in investigating and understanding them. So I think it's good for the space, and I would rather see more and more innovation. And if there's someone out there who actually wants to work together, even, you know, feel free to message me. I'm happy to help as well.
There you go, guys. One of the OG builders in the space just invited you to message him if you're building something interesting. Stani, thanks so much. This has been a lot of fun. And we always appreciate your vision, everything you're doing in crypto and in DeFi. So thanks for taking us through all of this. Really exciting to see Aave V3 launch. Really exciting to see what you do with Lens in the future. And all of the other things that you're probably going to build in crypto as well. So we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Ryan. Thank you, David. This was amazing. Amazing reunion.
Cheers.
Absolutely.
Let's do it again in less than a year next time.
Yeah, let's definitely do that.
Yeah.
Bankless community, some takeaways for you. I hope you were listening very intently and carefully. It seemed to me in the first part, we talked a little bit about investing in the community. That's what you are doing when you're buying a protocol. You're not just buying one static idea. You're investing in community. The best coordinated DAOs and protocols will win, and they are not limited to what they do when they start. They can evolve in many different directions. We've certainly seen that with Aave. Guys, if you are on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe to this. If you are listening to this on the podcast, give us a review. Give us a 5-star review, preferably. That's how we get Bankless to the top of the charts. Risks and disclaimers. Gotta, of course, end with these. None of this has been financial advice. Bitcoin is risky, even though we didn't talk about it. So is ETH. So is DeFi. You could definitely lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It isn't for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.